And I'm here in the studio with two people. Maddie, who usually does a show called Queering the Air, who's helping me out. Thank you, Maddie. Shout out to you to being here. And my partner, Ruben, who's helping out with the audio stuff as usual. We're really looking forward to playing this episode. So the next episode for this series was, again, another part of the podcast called West Side Stories. And this one will be talking to Opal, who's a puppeteer from a amazing organization called Golden Scissor Puppets. They've had this organization for the last 6 years or so, and they did a lot of stuff with snuff puppets. But this is an interview with me, with them in their studio, just before they're about to do a massive show. So shout out to Opal. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview with me, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So here it is. This podcast was recorded in Naam on the lands of the Wurundjeri and the Bunurong people of the Eastern Kulin Nations. Welcome to West Side Stories, a podcast dedicated to the voices of Melbourne's West. In this series, we speak with people who live, work, and create in the western suburbs. Community members, change makers, and artists who are shaping the culture and identity of the West. Today, I'm chatting with Opal, a puppeteer, an artist, and the brilliant mind behind Golden Scissor Puppets. Opal started Golden Scissors back in 2019 as a way to cope with climate anxiety. Because if the world is ending, why not make it entertaining, slightly bizarre, and surprisingly adorable? They've worked with the iconic snuff puppets on shows like Swamp and Cochlear. They've proved puppets can be huge, weird, and occasionally alarming in the best way possible. At Footscray Community Arts, Opal was a resident artist and was running everything from school holiday workshops to toddler jam and kids clay club, basically shaping the minds of tiny humans coming to FCA. Opal brings humour, heart, and a healthy dose of delightful chaos to everything they do, and I cannot wait for you to hear their story. So let's get into it. Thank you for joining us and welcome.
Thank you. It's very exciting to be here.
It's very nice having you. So I hear that you actually have lived in the West previous to this. I thought you were always based in the north, but what brought you first to the western suburbs when you moved to Australia?
Well, when I moved to, I lived in New Zealand for a few years, and then I moved back home to Jersey, little island in between France and England. And I thought that living that close to the UK would be something that, as a queer person, I'd be able to handle, and I couldn't. I moved to Melbourne, and I remember messaging a friend and being like, I'm moving to Melbourne. I don't have very much money. Like, where should I live? And they were like, Brunswick or Fitzroy is pretty cool. Or like, I like Footscray is pretty fun as well. And I just was looking around and then found a house in Footscray that was very cheap. And just like really like was kind of one of the only things I could organize like from overseas. Then I just ended up living in the West forever. And then only in the last like kind of year and a half did I move north side. But I still feel like my arts practice kind of like got properly born in the West. And it's just like a really special place, I think. I feel really embarrassed when people ask me where I live. And I'm like, where do you think I live? Obviously in Brunswick.
When you say that your art practice first started developing in the West, what do you mean by that? Where does that come from?
Well, when I moved here, I was like 25. Mm. I'm 32 now, and I was like very much a listless artist. Just made zines and things, and didn't really have like a huge direction. I think that I always felt really like subconscious or like just didn't know who I was and what I wanted to make yet. And then when I moved to the West, I saw snuff puppets on the street one day, and I was like, oh, wow, that's what I want to do with my life. Like, it was this, I like remember it so clearly, getting off the street, getting off the train at Footscray Station, walking down the steps, being like, what is that? And then going home and like being like, oh my God, I saw this amazing thing. And then, like, yeah, just kind of knocked on Snuff Puppet's door for ages, being like, let me in. And then eventually put on our own puppet show, because I was like, these people need to understand that I really mean it. And then did that. And then in lockdown, I got like some support from Lauren Bock, who is like one of the greatest like theatery people in Melbourne, I think. Such an incredible support for so many people. And they helped me like apply for a residency at Footscray Arts Centre, which is where I kind of felt like I'm being taken seriously here. And Irvi, who used to work there as well, who is like another one of my icons, they came and were like hanging out with me one day. I'm like, would you ever consider running a school program workshop? And I was like, yes, I would. And then it all just like took off from there. Like workshops, yeah. The puppets, the kind of like, it really, I feel like living in the West really helped me understand that like, not only do I love the puppets and I love making stuff, it's like making them with people and with the community is like the thing that is the most exciting to me, because that it's almost the most rewarding. Like making a puppet is really stunning and incredible and what I love to do. But like helping a young person be really silly or someone to kind of like let go of like their, what I held on to for so long, like their predisposition about what art is and how it should be. That's kind of like, I think, a big part of what I am focused on now is being like, everyone is an artist, everyone can make art. And yeah, I think that the Western suburbs and the support I got from them, from Footscray in particular, like has helped me to carry that through, even though now I live in bloody Brunswick.
Yeah. Well, no shame to you. I mean, currently in an amazing studio space with lots of different puppets, and I feel like there's anything could come alive at any moment. I just wanted to say, so working with snuff puppets, I mean, I saw your show Swamp and Coachella, is that what's the other one's called? Or
Cochlea.
Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about how that came about, what the concept was and how it was working with everyone and the different puppeteers?
Yeah, the Swamp, which is like a big show we made a couple of years ago, I think maybe we put it on twice, is so fun and amazing because it's like the Drill Hall in Footscray is like the highest concentration of weirdos in the Southern Hemisphere. Like, it's like the biggest group of like, we're all so wildly different from each other and also like, but also driven by this shared kind of like, by those snuff puppets, you know, by the wild and big things. It's so, making Swamp is so fun because it's so absolutely chaotic.
Yeah.
But it's like, we live in chaotic times. And so that, I always feel like it like balances a lot, you know? And the Cochlea, was like kind of like a project that I was like the lead artist on, like the resident artist, which is really amazing. I made it with my friend Ro Bright, who is again an absolute icon of theatre in Melbourne, and Nick Wilson, who is one of the creative directors at Snuff. And that was like a project like in collaboration with like the trans and gender diverse community, my community. And it was cool. Nick made this amazing inflatable thing. I conducted interviews with trans and gender diverse people, and then it's like this kind of meditation, I guess, or like what, like we were kind of like, what is a safe space? What do safe spaces look like? That word and that kind of vibe is so like not overused, but like not, I don't know. It doesn't feel like, what is a safe space? Like, people always talk about that, especially the queers. We're always like, or were always like talking about safe spaces, but it wasn't ever quite clear what that is. Mm. And the Cochlea itself is like, well, this is a safe space. Like we have created one and this is a place you can come in, you can sit down, you can listen to like trans and gender diverse stories from around the world and around the Western suburbs as well. And just, yeah, like Snuff is so incredible because they've been around for 30 years, obviously, over 30 years. And it's like never shies away from like the political nature of art and like puppetry and protest go hand in hand. Yeah. Like, those things are synonymous with one another. Like, even in the States, like, during the Black Lives Matter protests, puppet studios were raided by the cops because puppets disrupt in such a way that, like, the optics of people, like, you know, tearing down a big puppet at a protest, police people, isn't a great look. So you need to kind of get rid of them before they get there, because once they're there, they elicit such a big response from people. It's so joyous, you know, it's so amazing. Yeah. Like, it's so easy to communicate what you're trying to say with a puppet, because it's, yeah, gets a little philosophical, but it's like the, you can say so much more with a puppet than you can with a person, because the puppet isn't a person, you know, I would call it a sacred object. And then when you physically put your heartbeat into it, either like a Muppet style puppet with your hand or like climbing in a giant snuff puppet, your heartbeat and the puppet's heartbeat are the same heartbeat. And that is like incredibly important, I think. I always say with our puppets, like, as soon as you start feeling anxious, the puppet starts feeling anxious, and we can see that anxiety manifest in your body.
Yeah. Because when you think of a puppet, I mean, initially it's thought of as a child's toy, but you're kind of this concept, I mean, just to people that don't know what Swamp is and like what that is that it's taking in the embodiment of a real life creature and a human in that. And then with Swamp, it was about climate change, I'm assuming, with the thing of that. So making something which A, seems quite childlike and can be quite silly, as you say, and playful, but then talk about really serious things in a way that maybe a speech or a conversation or other forms of art can't. Yeah, do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's like if, so like in Swamp, for example, it's all kind of about like ecological disaster and like the primordial swamp that we all came from and that we are all heading back towards because we were destroying the earth so rapidly. And it had like all these animals kind of having these moments, and then through human like disturbance, they die. All the puppets die. Like the frill neck lizard gets hit by a car, like the koala that I was playing dies in a forest fire.
Very tragic, I have to say. I was crying at that moment when watching that scene.
Yeah, it's like, that was like, that's the bit that I feel like people are like, oh, I saw a stuffed puppet show a while ago. There was this horrific bit with a koala. And I'm like, yeah, that was me. It's like, the good thing about them is that they can jump from silly to serious very quickly. Mm. And that's something it feels very intrinsic to me as well. Mm. Like, being very silly, but then also being able to like be very earnest. Yeah, the puppets are like they're so disarming because they are for children. But like, I think, or like puppets are typically for children. But we've seen so many puppets around the world that aren't, like the Muppets, for example, that was started kind of like trying to not make puppets for children or make a show that is interesting to both children and adults. Mm. The first Muppet show ever made was called Sex and Violence. It was called The Muppets, Sex and Violence, which is really wild to think about being a thing. And I think that like in Australia in particular, it's very interesting because there's like, and I'm so interested in this idea of like Indigenous puppetry, because from the research I've done and people I've spoken to, it doesn't really seem like it's much of a thing, because why would you need something to represent something when the thing you're trying to represent is in front of you?
Yeah.
But like in Indonesia, there's like the Wayang Kulit puppets that were like developed to tell stories about gods because you couldn't depict the gods, so they made shadow puppets. And they're like culturally, like China has such a big puppetry tradition, and Eastern Europe also has like a massive one. France has marionettes, like that is a specific, that's a French word for a type of puppet. They're like culturally linked very much. In Australia they're really not, which I find like that's a little bit why maybe we have such extreme and hectic puppets here sometimes, like why snuff puppets exist, or you know, not why it exists, but like, yeah, I just feel like there's like a,
maybe why it's shocking to people to see a snuff puppet in the middle of a street, because it's such a big thing and it's kind of a bit creepy in some sense, but kind of not in a way because it's a puppet too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I feel like so often with the puppets, some people are like, ooh, that thing's so weird and like yucky and I hate looking at it, but then other times, like, the next person will be like, I actually think it's really cute. Like, I really like that puppet. Like, I don't think it's creepy at all. And I'm always like, good. You're like the target audience. And I feel like I was a scared little child. Like, I was scared of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I see kids being particularly scared of the puppets, I'm like, you might grow up to be a puppeteer too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at the ABC recently, we had an open house event and they had the bananas in pajamas and they were twice your height and you're quite a tall person. Yeah. And I was quite intimidated as a fully grown adult being like, oh my God, they're huge. And these little kids were like, nah, I'm not talking to the puppets. They're too scary. They're too big, you know? Yeah.
It's like, as soon as, I think that's like a huge part as well. As soon as you can't see the human, like, I always find it so interesting and like, I love it in the puppets because like, I'm no longer what people would perceive as like a large man. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why like a lot of the puppeteers I know are queer, because it's like, you get to put this puppet on and then you're not being read as that thing. You are now being read as a koala or a demon or like a different thing that we've made. Like, then the audience is interacting with you as that thing only.
Yeah.
And it's funny because sometimes people will come up and be like, oh, there's a person in there. And it's like, yeah, obviously there's a person in there. But like, like that's like very funny because when people really hammer on about that bit as well, I'm always like, something about this is making you uncomfortable and you're not quite sure. So you're trying to kind of like gain a bit of control back of it by being like, it's just a person. Just a person in there.
In a suit. Yeah. In a suit.
Yeah, exactly. But like so many other people are like being the koala, and there's like kids coming up to me, like when we were doing like roams at like Footscray Park or something, kids coming up and being like so sweet and tender, you know, and just being like, oh, hello, Mr. Koala. Would you like, can I feed you some leaves? Like just really like sold on it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Their
imagination hasn't been crushed quite like adults. They can still play into it in a way that adults just go, no, that's a real person in a suit. I don't really care.
Yeah. It's so, I just really love that like weird liminal place that the puppets can hold where they like if you can suspend your disbelief to really get into this, you're going to have a really good time.
Yeah.
But if you're like, well, that's just this. It's like, yeah, okay, it can just be that. Like, that's fine too.
Yeah.
But what if you let yourself believe in it, of it? And yeah, I think that like goes into like what I was saying before about like kind of letting people feel confident in their art and stuff like that. It's like with the puppets, it's like these opportunities, you know, to be imaginative and to be silly, not only for the puppeteers, but also for the public, you know, or for the audience to absorb it. However they want. Yeah. I honestly feel like I could monologue about puppets
for a long time.
4 months, yeah.
Well, tell us about your own company that you created in 2019, the Golden Scissors Puppet, which we're in the studio right now with. How did that start? How did that come about? What made you think, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make my own puppets, you know, outside of Snuff?
Yeah, I just saw, like, because I hadn't been involved in Snuff then, and I saw them doing it, and I was like, oh, this is a thing I'm allowed to do. This is a thing we can do. And me and my friends, who at the time, like, no one was performers, no one, like, everyone was just working. I was just like, I want to put on a puppet show. And I worked at a youth climate justice organization, which was so hectic, like, nightmarish times. But, like, it was funny. We'd call people up and be like, hey, like, we're, like, you know, we want to stop a coal mine. And people would be like, nah, I don't care about that. Like, get the immigrants out. And we'd be like, cool, 6666, awesome. But like, what are you talking about? And it was like this, I often say, like, with the things that are going on in the world, it's like, it's so overwhelming, it's so stressful, and like, we live in hell a bit. But I'm like, all I can do about this is make a puppet show about it. Like, I have no idea how else to process this other than, let's try and make a puppet show about it and then see what happens. And yeah, GSP, Goddesses of Puppets, started just with that one show. And then it's crazy to think that 6 months after that show, we went into lockdown, because they feel like years apart.
Yeah.
But they weren't, it's only 6 months. And then, yeah, we made this show Anthropocene that was all about like kind of what happens to the four horsemen of the apocalypse after the end of the climate crisis.
Yeah.
And then the next show was Hellmouth, which looking back on was obviously just about the lockdowns and like us processing it and stuff like that. And then the last show, Motus and Mort, was that kind of after spending months watching horrific travesties on our phones and not really knowing what to do about that and how to process it, we made a show about these puppets trying to keep their baby alive whilst they're being chased by bombs, which, like, as Australians, like, I think that, or, like, you know, people who haven't had that experience, making a show like that with people would be so difficult, but making it with puppets, it kind of enters this more surreal space where we can kind of address those stories and talk about those stories in a way that people maybe can. People aren't going to watch it and be like, oh my God, that's so weird that these group of, like, this, like, white person is making this story about this. It's like, I also feel like I want to talk about that story, but I understand that it's not my story to tell. So I can kind of remake a story about my feelings to do with it. And it can be consumed in a way that is a puppet show, but is ultimately, like, me processing, watching babies die on my phone, you know? And that's, like, a core part of the shows. But this year we were like, because I wanted to kind of combine all the shows into one giant show, because it's called the Apocalypse Trilogy. But they're heavy. They're hard to make because it's emotionally deep and depthy. And so this year we were like, it's the year of silliness. And we kind of have realized, or kind of I had this realization that, like, we don't need to actually harp on about this stuff anymore because it's not going anywhere. Like, it's happening and everyone realizes how horrific it is. And in this moment, in this year, I was kind of like, our contribution to the revolution is levity.
Yeah.
And to give people a bit of a break. And, like, we did a show, we did the Nativity Christmas last year, which was, like, not, we couldn't even get everyone in the room. It was amazing how many people came.
Wow.
And then it was just kind of like us telling the story of the Nativity with the puppets and Igor, who is, like, kind of me doing drag a bit.
Your alter ego, Igor.
Yeah. My alter ego, Igor, who talks a lot like this, and he presents the puppet shows, and he's quite a funny little man who, you know, he's a little bit shy, and he's, you know, he tries his best, but he doesn't always quite get it right. But the thing about Igor is he's a bit of a jester, so I'm a bit of a jester, so I can say things. When we're doing the Nativity show, I was able to say things like, oh, you know, wouldn't be able to do this today, would you? It'd be really hard for a, you know, a man and a woman and their baby to get all the way from Jerusalem to Bethlehem because they'd probably be killed on the way. And it just is like, it's kind of like that jester thing, you know? It's like the clowning, kind of like, we're going to talk about it and it's going to be very obvious and it's going to be very on the nose and we're not going to sugarcoat it in any way. But it's like, this is absurd and like, terrifying and soul destroying, and we're trying not to shy away from that and be like, we can address it in a way that kind of makes people, like, I think people feel a bit exhausted from interacting with it and with the war that's going on at the moment and what Israel is doing and what is happening in the world and has been happening for so long. And it was, we were so, like, I used to work in high schools and kids would be so scared about climate change, they'd be crying. And now it's a different thing they're crying about, but none of those things have gone away.
Yeah.
They've just been, there's just something worse and bigger and more immediate that's happening. And it feels like kind of, people have always thought they've been alive during the end of time. And, like, the apocalypse has already happened for Indigenous people and is happening in Palestine at the moment. And it's like, we are, like, yeah, trying to talk about it a bit more in a way that's, like, accessible, like taking puppets to a protest, which is, like, people aren't just like, oh, these bloody lefties just protesting everything. It's like, you can't look at a giant puppet and not, it, you know, you can, you absolutely can. But, like, if there's a giant puppet there and it's joyous, it's like, despite the evil of what the people in power are doing, we're going to still be having fun and we're going to still be celebrating and we're going to still be trying to create a world that we want to live in and that we want to protect because, God, like, we can, I've spent so much of my life just in a depression pit and depression hole. And it's like, I could totally go back there, very justified, I think. Most of us could, but it's like, we need to start bringing something to.
But what does it do? What is it? What you're saying is that you're kind of bringing in the idea that, okay, things are really bad and things are always bad in the world and what's happening. And just that, I mean, this time, day and age, we can see it every day. Yeah. It's on our social media. We get this like bombardment of trauma and horrificness. And we don't know how to process it. But your way of saying that, let's make art out of this. Let's make a story out of this. Let's talk about it. Let's make it relevant to people that they can feel, that they can digest it in some way.
Yeah.
Through your puppets, which is incredible.
Yeah. We give it a red hot go. It's like, I feel like it's like the thing of like, I have no idea what like to do. Like, I have no answers. And all I do have is a passion to build puppets.
Yeah.
And so if I can kind of like marry those two things together in a way that helps people, or, you know, people who are really like doing a lot of activism, like proper, like not just, you know, I say proper, but like, I mean, not just making puppets. Like, it's so important for, like, it's like everyone needs to be addressing this at every possible angle. Mm. And we are the puppeteers addressing it. And this is how we're addressing it. And, you know, not having very much money most of the time and not having the resources that we would if we were like a humongous arts organization, which means we probably wouldn't be able to do this work, means that we don't get to do it as much as we want to, and we don't get to put as much time into it. But yeah, we're always trying to, yeah, think of ways to do it, and also to give people a bit of a break from it, you know, and get them laughing and get them feeling silly and kind of having this moment of reprieve, so that when they do go back and do really important work, they know that, yeah, the clowns and the jesters and the puppets are also like still trying to join the conversation, you know, and still trying to kick up a bit of a stink about it. I feel like I said a lot then, but...
No, it's great. Tell me, I mean, looking at, say, from Footscray Community Arts as a community art space, and you've worked, as you were saying before, you worked with artists with disability, you've worked with kids, teaching them about arts and puppeteering, and does that in some way give you hope for the future of what's going to happen, seeing kids making art and doing those, those programs?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that it's, like, super important. Like, when I was a kid, when I was growing up, I'm 32, so I was born in 1993. When I was growing up, the only queer person I knew was Elton John. Like, it's so funny. Like, it's crazy that that is the only person that I was thought, oh, no, that's who I need to be like, because he was the only one. And as an adult, I've now learned that was because they were all killed. They all died because of the AIDS crisis. And so there weren't any elders. And forever, I felt, growing up on a tiny little island, I was the only queer person I knew. It wasn't until I moved to the other side of the world that I met people even slightly like me. And I feel like working with kids in particular, I'm like, you need to see a funny, strange, bizarre adult being a funny, strange, bizarre adult who is happy and who is themselves and doesn't feel like they need to live up to an expectation or a vision of themselves.
Yeah.
Because actually, like, the best thing you can do is be a little freak, you know, because that's what the world needs, I think. And like working with artists with disabilities as well, like that's like a huge part of it, is making sure that they feel like their voice matters, because it does. I actually say I'm often like, art made by like adults with disabilities is my favorite art, because it's just so much more real and raw, and like isn't, like, I never went to art school. I never have any sort of academic education around the arts, which does not help me a lot of the time, but, you know, hopefully keeps my voice a bit purer. The kids will make, I'll ask them questions that, like, they'll say something and they'll ask them a question and they always have an answer to it, you know? I'll ask them the stupidest, weirdest question in the world, knowing that it's a bizarre question, and they'll be like, yeah, well, this, here's the answer. And I'm like, that is incredible. I need to write that down, because that feels very pure and, like, very close to the creative spirit or core. And with the artists with disabilities, it's, like, figuring out ways to help these artists who often have been making art longer than I've been alive, you know? And, like... figuring out what their art is, what they're most interested in art, and what we can do to, like, make sure that their voices are heard, because a lot of the time these people just want to have like a good time, you know, they're just out for a great day. And like, God, if we were all more like that, the world would be like a more glorious place. If you rocked up to work and your whole kind of intention was, I'm gonna have a nice time, I'm excited to be here with these people, and not being a grumpy bum like I can be. It's really special. I really love working. I just really love teaching art to people, because they, seeing someone kind of like be like, oh, I can do this. I don't care what they're making. I don't care what they produce at the end. But if they feel that they can do it, I'm like, done.
Yeah.
Oh my God, amazing. Finished.
I mean, do you see the organization? I mean, not even just the drill hall is it Snuff Puppets, it's also the Women's Circus as well, which was at Footscray Arts for a very long time too. So these kind of institutions of, or like, you know, Footscray Arts is 50, 60 years now. Like, it's been around, and it was a unionist movement, as Bern was telling me in the previous interview, because you're here if you listen to the other episode of this podcast, from the meat workers as a unionist part, saying that we deserve an art space in that. Do you feel that this time and age and the world and places like Footscray Arts, there are spaces for artists to come together and collectively talk about what's happening in make art? Or do you feel like that's on the decline?
Yeah, I feel like it's on the decline, which is such a bum. Like, I really feel like I think they are still doing it. I think there's like places like Unassigned Gallery in Brunswick is absolutely one of the most important things, I think. Like, Noor, who runs that, does such an incredible job of like creating those spaces for people to just come together and make art. And like, that thing is so important. Like, we have like a little weekly art club at its studio that I just send to the group chat, where it's just like, there's no vision here, there's no goal, we're not working on something, you can just come and hang out, because that's where the most important things happen, you know, in the incidental, like, I'm making something, you're making something, we get an idea, or we process something together. And I think that like libraries are the only free spaces we're allowed to be anymore. The idea of like going to a cafe and working with people, like, you're going to get kind of rushed away pretty quickly. I think that in this late stage capitalism we're living under, it's getting like extremely difficult. And like, the like warehouse that the puppets are in is like it's not cheap, you know, like everything costs a lot of money. And when you're making puppets, you're not often rolling in it, you know. But yeah, it's just I feel like it's really important that we like create as many of them as possible. And I think that the reason why they struggle a bit is because they do kind of challenge power a lot. When a group of artists get together and start doing something, things can really change. And because of that, I think that we're kind of losing that. And I think in Melbourne in particular, it's like, that's what makes us good. That is what makes Melbourne important. That's what makes Melbourne different to Sydney, you know, and to other places, other big cities in the world, is that there is a strong connection to the DIY, like, you know, the graffiti, the like whole, like, just doing it because you want to do it and you have to do it. And as an artist, you need to do it. And I just am like, I get so scared sometimes that like, I'm experiencing the end of everything. And I'm like, God, when I look at like my idols and my mentors and stuff like that, none of them are rich. Like, none of them have lots of money. They're all still pushing really hard to get their stuff done. And that's what I'm aiming for, you know? It would be nice to be a little bit more comfortable, but I know that under this current system, there's not going to be much chance for that. So if I can just keep on working hard and making art and creating spaces for as many different kinds of artists to get together and talk and cry and laugh and be silly, that's my job, that's my role, you know? And yeah, it's like, I don't pay the bills.
No. But that's a really beautiful way of rebellion. You're like, you're doing it in an artistic practice to go, you know, it is a time in the world where we feel powerless, and there's a lot of things happening and there's a big struggle in that. But I think it's like, everyone is in the doom and gloom, but I really think, you know, organizations. Like what you're creating here is really amazing. What Snuffs is doing is like, you know, they're still putting things out. Footscray Arts is building a new, whole new arts precinct. The Women's Circus is still running after all those years. Like they're instrumental to the West and the stories of the people in those communities. And there's, you know, they're not maybe thriving, but it's always ebbs and waves, you know?
Yeah, totally. And it's like, that is like, it's amazing to me that there are three really important things just in this one suburb, you know, this suburb that when I first moved here, people were like, ooh, like the West, like that was only 7 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
And those, yeah, Snuff Puppets and the Women's Circus are vitally important. And the Community Arts Centre also is like so important for like Footscray being one of the most diverse places in Australia, not even just in Melbourne. Like Melbourne is one of the most, is the most diverse place in Australia. And Footscray is kind of the most diverse within that. And it's like, we can lose that.
Yeah.
We could lose that. And it's, yeah, it is like so incredible to me that there is this one suburb and like this, you know, the West that like birthed Snuff Puppets, Lee Bowery, you know, like these transgressive like artists that completely push boundaries and have international acclaim like Snuff Puppets does. Like there's awards from like the People's Republic of China and stuff in their drill hall. And it's like, yeah, I think it's just so important that they are left to thrive, you know?
Yeah.
And
I mean, the Western Bulldogs did try and take that land.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think it was part of theirs and that football scene saying, well, football's the most important part of the West and the Bulldogs and be like, what's this? Let's just pull that down.
It's crazy to me. Look, no one's ever gone home and beaten their wife after watching a puppet show. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's important. You know, sport's important. Sport is great. Sport is amazing. But sport was never a place that I was allowed to be in because I literally got attacked in it. You know, like, I literally was not allowed in it.
Yeah.
And I'm giant. I'm built like a refrigerator. You know, like, I could have been good at one of these things, but it's not a space that ever was accepting to me. And it is crazy that, like, the monolithic patriarchy, you know, is like, yes, bugger the puppets. Like, we're just going to take this and this is going to be ours now. And it's like, you are so, it's so puzzling because it's so important. It's so iconic. It's changed so many people's lives. It engages directly at the moment with the Vietnamese community, the East African Women's Foundation, the Pacific community in the Western suburbs where all these communities live. And directly one-on-one creating puppets with them for the People's Puppet Projects. Like, to think that those communities, like, don't get to have this experience and don't get to, like first generate, like, people who've moved from these countries overseas for whatever reason and need to teach their children the stories of their culture and have chosen or reached out to Snuff Puppets because that's part of what they do with the People's Puppet Project is, We create stories based on your culture. And that's so important. Like, and it's so incredible for like elders of communities to be like, oh, do you know what? Like this group of like absolute freaks, we're going to get them to give us a hand because it's a consumable message, you know?
Yeah.
And we can make the stories of our, like, of our culture and it can be understood by young people who would never grow up on the land that these stories are from.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, Snuff have done those people puppet projects like all over, like with remote indigenous communities in Australia, with communities in the Congo, with communities in China. Like we're doing one, there's ones that exist in the drill hall with the Vietnamese community. And it's just like, this is a hub of connection for not just these funny artists for communities.
Yep.
And that's like the glory and I think magic of the puppets is you can interpret this however you want. You can see it as like, oh, that's just like a bunch of weird freaks doing crazy stuff. Why should they have this big drill hall? But it's like, because the stories that are held here are fleeting, you know, and they deserve to have a dedicated space. And the fear of like a bloody football stadium, turning it into a museum or something like that. It's like, put a puppet on, exist as a koala for a bit, shed this man's skin, you know, just be free in a way, and then
put this poppet on. Yeah. That's the line. I love that.
Yeah, put it on and shut up and get out there. And see what it's like not being you for a bit. Yeah. Because that's what's been, yeah, I think as there's so many queer puppeteers and they seem so drawn to it because, yeah, that is that, it is that mask. And yeah, I just really love community. And I really want the community, I really want all our communities to be able to thrive and have a good time and be joyous, yeah, you know, and laugh together. And I've seen them be sweet. And I'm like, you can be sweet to everyone, mm-hmm, you know? It's a little bit harder, but like the payoff is a million times better. And yeah, I bloody love the West. I think it's just so special and rare. And I think that Australia or Melbourne, you know, that's the only place I've lived, coming from Jersey and coming from the UK, like Jersey's a tax haven. I'm one of like, I'm always like, I'm one of four poor people from there, grew up in council estates. And like the freedom I've experienced and seen in Australia is amazing. Like the fact that Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, is the most famous film, you know, that is the film of Australia. And it's about drag queens,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that is saying something already. Yeah. And I bring that up all the time because I'm like, that's not like, I can't think of any sort of film that has that sort of same queer subtext that's so culturally important.
I don't even think it's even a subtext. I think it's right out there. Yeah. Like, it's like, we're going on a bus, we're going to put a giant shoe on it, and we're going to have gold, you know, streamers from the back of it. Yeah. In a time when, yeah, queerdom was really not accessible in a lot of parts of Australia, which it probably still isn't. But yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, it's so, it's so beautiful. Yeah, I always think that, yeah, like Australian masculinity is like a particularly interesting thing. And the more we get everyone making art and kind of expressing themselves and not like bringing themselves down and not like policing each other and like let people be an idiot, let people, like, I think the queers getting a bit of power because there was enough of us finally kind of for the last 10 years created a bit of this nightmarish cancel culture that I feel like we're finally kind of aging out of, and reflecting on and being able to be like, oh, that actually was really crap when we cut everyone in our lives out. We should definitely not do that again. is like, yeah, I think we are in a very pivotal moment of like, and we probably always are, of like, oh, this potentially could get really good or really bad.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really difficult to make it really good. Or we could just like sit on our ass and let it get really bad. Like, I feel like the UK is in such dire straits. And you don't see it on the news here. Like, you don't hear about it. How dangerous it is for trans people there. And
yeah,
everything. It's just such a nightmare world, I think. And I'm like terrified that that's going to happen here. And then in 30 years' time, there won't be any. Like, there was this company called Welfare State that was the kind of almost snuff puppets equivalent in the UK. That got shut down in the 80s. Like, doesn't exist. They engaged with communities in like state housing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it does not exist because of fund. I was reading their book the other day and it's like funding cuts have meant we can no longer exist. And it's like, that was 40 years ago that you were like, we can't do this anymore. And yeah, God, let's bloody not let it happen here. And let's remember what makes Melbourne good and special is actually housed a lot in the West because there's no pretense to it. It is just community. Yeah.
I love that. Thank you so much for your time. And yeah, what was it? Put a puppet on.
Yeah, put a puppet on it. Shut up. Yeah.
That's the line. That's the hashtag from now on. To all toxic men out there, put a puppet on and shut up. Well, thanks so much for being on this and chatting. It was so interesting to hear your insights. And best of luck with the show. I know you're very busy.
Yeah, no worries. Absolutely. Loved it. And also, one thing I just wanted to plug other than Golden Scissor Puppets is once a month, the first Wednesday of every month, online, I run a peer-to-peer kind of chat with disabled queer people who typically, like, you know, maybe live in the country, so they don't have lots of queer people around, or, you know, maybe they've got a disability that means they can't leave the house very often. And it's through Inclusive Rainbow Voices. Look it up on Instagram, Inclusive Rainbow Voices. And it's called Community Cafe. And it is just a space where we get to chat, catch up, just ramble.
Awesome.
Yeah, so come along.
Great. Beautiful. Thanks.
You've been listening to West Side Stories, a podcast dedicated to the voices and stories of Melbourne's West. As we wrap up this episode, I want to extend my heartfelt thanks to my partner, Ruben Cumming, who engineered the podcast and composed the theme music. I'd also like to thank Footscray Community Arts for the generous use of their podcast studio and for supporting the vibrant, inspiring community of artists and storytellers who joined me throughout this first series. It's been a privilege to share their voices with you. Thank you for listening and for being part of West Side Story's journey. Until next time. See ya. And that was the second episode of West Side Stories with Opal. So big shout out to them. Thank you so much. They're an amazing performer, an amazing puppeteer, and a real hoot to basically interview and work with at Footscray Arts as well with the Art Life crew. Shout out to them. You're on 3CR. So you know it's 8:55 a.m. or you can stream live as well on their 3cr.org.au. So yeah, listen in, tune in, and thanks so much for the guys that usually do the show Moving Image that I've filled in. I hope you're having a great little holiday break. It's so good to be here and be on the radio. I'm just going to play a few community announcements and then we'll get into some local music in the West.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Trans Family are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Trans Family is a 3CR supporter.
And now we're going to be playing a track by our mates who did a new single that just came out only 2 days ago. It's the first single for a track and the song is called Rock Turtle Baby. The band is called Midnight Violet. They're an amazing band who've been rehearsing a lot in Footscray Arts as well and playing a lot of music. They're a bit funky and a little bit rocky. So I hope you guys enjoy and make sure to listen out to when the album is launched. But enjoy Rock Turtle Baby.
Awesome.
Now that was a Rock Turtle Baby by Midnight Violet. That's their new single that's just come out literally only 2 days ago. So congrats to you guys. What a beautiful track that is. The next track that we have coming up is Jack Fillmore. So Jack Fillmore actually worked on The Puppet Show with Opal, was the musician for Gollancz's Puppets, and The Cult of the Lamb was the recent show. He's a local West Side musician, amazing, a little bit less folky and a little bit more techie. So this one's called Feb 4th. I hope you guys like it. Please enjoy. And that was Jack Fillmore, Feb 4th. So he played on the show on Gollancz's Puppets, and that was called The Cult of the Lamb. He's an amazing musician based in the West. I'm just going to play a few community announcements. Remember that you're on 3CR. The radio signal is 855 AM, and if you want to get online, it's 3cr.org.au, so you can stream live. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll play a few community announcements.
Hi, Melinda here from On Screen, and we're taking
another holiday.
And On Screen will return on Saturday, the 24th of January at 11 AM.
Hi everyone, thanks for coming back. We've got only 3 more minutes left of the show before the next up, what will be Dog's Dog, the Defence of Government Schools. So I'll just play one little track to kind of set us off into summer. Thanks so much for listening. This has been West Side Stories, and you're on 3CR, and we'll catch you next week at the same time, and it will be an interview of Ruth, who is a South Sudanese artist that has an organisation called Next in Colour, and I'll be doing an interview with her. So thanks so much for listening in, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Factories lie, and the West Gate stretches across the sky. I've lived north and I've moved south, but I always return to the river mouth. City of the secrets pour through the pipes that we laid 100 years ago. Love and
kind of a lot of things that are coming up to the fore at the moment as well.
A woman of science in the tower, bar, her laboratory, a labor of love. There she worked while the war raged on.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.